online at adaytolisten.ca. I'm Kim Wheeler. Chi-Miigwech for listening.
This is A Day to Listen, in partnership with the Gord Downie and Cheney Wenjack Fund. Find the podcast and more great Indigenous storytellers at adaytolisten.ca.
And it's 7 o'clock. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. Douglas.
Yes, John. How are you?
I'm all right.
You're just all right.
Just fine.
Yeah. It's really interesting to see how some of our listeners here at Aboriginal Voices contact us, and some do it by, you know, just stopping and talk to us either in the store or as I'm out walking, or if I call and talk to people and they say, oh, well, we could do this or we could do that and that sort of thing. But one conversation that I had 2 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, it was the end of April, early May. You know, the conversation was around, have we ever done a feature about Indigenous artists in Canada?
Did you say, didn't you listen to the show?
We did that over time, but not as a feature.
We've done it on several occasions.
Right.
Where were you?
Maybe new to Aboriginal Voices. I'm not sure.
Right.
I'm not sure. But I thought, okay, well, we could sort of go back and see. And one of the questions that I have as I get going is, when were Indigenous artists focused, or when did people, I'm going to say institutions, like the National Gallery of Art in Ottawa, or the Ontario Art Gallery, or, you know, local little art galleries and museums around across the country. So, you know, what's the earliest time that they featured Indigenous artists? And that's where I started. Where would you go if I asked you to start that project? Have you got a suggestion?
The internet. I'd probably go to the internet.
And what would be
your first? Is that what you mean?
Yep. Okay. What's your first question? What do you want?
When did Canada decide that First Nations had artists in the crowds?
Right. That's sort of what I did. You know. So who comes to mind was my question, and I have a number of Indigenous artists that, you know, you and I have met through the years, and I just wondered, I wonder if they're going to mention those people. And
maybe they will. They won't. They'll probably, we got this Kent Monkman.
Oh.
He's some sort of a genius.
Oh, yeah?
I don't think so. But like all them art people, that's what they think.
Okay. Well,
they think, oh, this Kent Monkman making us really think about stuff. No, he's not.
No. Yeah. Anyway, I do have.
Hey, people fall all over that guy.
Oh, is that right?
Why? Yeah.
I'm not sure. Well, I'm going to have to go look at some of his art. I've only seen two pieces of his artwork, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then. Yeah, okay. But I don't know. That's, you know, 20 years ago, young fellow. He was just out of art school. He went to the Woodland Art School in Northern Ontario. And he just started out on his own. He lives in north of Trenton. Wooler, up around Wooler, and A.J. Van Dree. And when I got to go and see his workshop and listen to him, you and I heard the interview that I did, you know, a long time ago. And so then I asked him if he does workshops for kids, you know, and he said, well, I could think about one. And anyway, the elementary school where I was working before when I retired, I went to the two of the teachers there and said, interested, if you want to bring this fellow in, he could work with your grade fours and grade fives. And, you know, you'd see how it is. Give him a chance to try it. Well, it was a huge success. Kids loved it. And it turns out that they did it almost the time that we're broadcasting this, late May. And a few of the kids thought, this is great. I'm going to do one of these pieces of art for my dad for Father's Day. And so the teachers ended up having AJ do the whole day workshop with three classes, I guess, is what he did. And then the kids picked his brain. So they sat with him at lunchtime and chatted with him, asked questions about colors and how to get the loon or the bear or the fox in the picture that they want. And that's where it came out that one of them said, I'm going to do that for my dad for Father's Day. Well, AJ was so pleased that he came back to the school near the end of June that year, and the kids all had their paintings to share, their paintings and the story that went with it. AJ was just in heaven, just listening to the impact of his art and his artistic style that they picked up and had fun with. So, yeah, I think it could be a lot of fun. But his name never came up so far in my research, so that's what I'm going to dig into.
Cool.
One of the things we could do is go on a tour, if you like.
A tour?
Yeah, it'll be a virtual tour, if you want.
Are we not allowed at the Etherington anymore?
Oh, yeah, you are. They moved all of the
privileges.
No, they've moved everything out of the old building because it's being reconstructed, and there's a new building sort of set up. But we'll invite some of the curators and the people who can talk to us.
What's taking them so long?
Building.
Like they're building a whole new building? Did they knock that one down?
Yeah, didn't you see the drawings?
Yeah.
Whoa, it's huge.
They don't share those things with me.
Oh, I thought they did.
No, they said, so let's see, who should we show these to? No, not him.
Sean. They should show it to Sean because
Douglas?
He has...
Well, sure, we'll show it to Douglas. How about Sean? No, he can't see.
You asked too many very pointed questions. That's what it is. I don't know.
Is that what it is?
No idea.
I ask questions they have no answers for.
Yeah, and you make them laugh, too. That's the other problem.
I hope so.
Yeah. Anyway.
Hopefully I make them think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm just thinking, what music do you think? Crystal Shawanda, maybe?
Sure, let's go with some of that Crystal Shawanda.
Yeah, how about Crystal with a song called When It Comes to Love?
All right.
Yeah, we all love art.
It depends on the art, I guess.
Oh, I like
that. Like I said, never mind.
No, but...
That Monkman guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't classify him as art.
No, but, you know, you just sparked in me something else that we should probably categorize it. What is art? But because...
Not that.
No, because, well, how about weaving or beading or carving? Those are all forms of art.
We would say they're art.
Yeah.
They would be sort of industrial art.
Oh, okay. I like that.
Like,
okay.
You remember back in the day?
You're adding to our research.
Like school, and you would go into like industrial arts.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we called it when I was taken in school and stuff like that. Oh, well, industrial arts in like period 8 or whatever it was. And so you would go in and you would get to do all these things. And learn about all of this, build this, forge that, woodworking. But no, you can't do any of that now.
No, they've taken it out of most of schools, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you've given me a whole new direction to go on this, but it's going to be
worthwhile. I blame Carney.
I think you got it. When did you go to school? Last week? we're going to do some research on this. We're going to invite people to be part of it. We'll do this maybe over three or four. I don't know. It's kind of like other projects that we had, like with authors. You do one or two and three, and next thing you know, it snowballs, and you end up all summer. You could be doing arts and artists. So, but we'll throw it out to listeners. You could write to us with artists from your community that you would like us to interview and feature. And that contact would be Aboriginal Voices. So that's all one, lowercase letters, Aboriginal Voices at CFRC.ca. You know, and that give us an email, and we'll be happy to contact you, and you can let us know exactly where the contact information about the artist that you want us to, and if you're the artist, then let us know for sure. We'll have a chat. We can add to this. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, a musical artist that we are going to feature is Crystal Shawanda, and this song is called When It Comes to Love, and you have to love art.
My name is Genevieve, and I'll be hosting Peace, Love, and Jenny on CFRC 101.9 FM on Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. We'll be exploring everything from pop and soul to funk, jazz, and even a touch of hip-hop. Music that spans decades but all connects through good vibes, peace and love, and of course, a little bit of me, Jenny. See you there!
Hey, punk. Do you like weird stuff made by real human artists? Want to know where to find taxidermy, patches, tattoos, paintings, stickers, zines, felted pieces, repurposed clothing, jewelry, plushies, hand illustrations, mutual aid foraging information, local preserves, buttons, cards, crochet, and punk performances all under one roof? Come check out the first ever Cataraqui Punk Rock Flea Market on Saturday, May 30th from 1 till 3 at the Broom Factory as part of Spring Reverb. CFRC DJs will be spinning tunes in between sets by the Meringues and Havana Syndrome. With nearly 30 vendors indoors and outdoors, you're sure to find something that speaks to your strange side.
Every day you hear something new on CFRC. Can you keep up? You need a weekly recap. Catch up with What's Climbing Friday mornings at 10. The charts on CFRC.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
You said that there would be enough, enough. said I'd be okay. You said there would be enough. All I heard you say,
things that I love about spending time in the woods is that when you start to become really attuned to all the beings that are around you, you realize that they're here for a reason. You can look at the woods and start to see stories that are present in the woods.
Bonjour. Shabadaske gish kokwe nedeshnakas, budwe wat mi koyenda, megazedo dem, minwa makoto dem. In our beautiful Potawatomi language, I've introduced myself. I am Robin Wall Kimmerer, Anishinaabe woman, member of the Bear Clan and of the Eagles, and a member of the Citizen Potawatomi Nation. I am a professor of environmental biology at the SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry here in Syracuse, New York. I'm a botanist, a plant ecologist, and also the director of the Center for Native Peoples and the Environment. I chose for us to meet here at the Clark Reservation State Park in Jamesville, New York, because at this time of year when snow has just begun to melt and spring is thinking about arriving, this is one of the best places to see those first signs of spring.
you know, right here it comes to mind. We're walking on this path and this little evergreen vine here, you think, oh, well, yeah, that's nice and green on the ground. But in fact, this is telling us a story. This, and you can see the way it's just one patch of this. This tells us that this was an old home site. This is a little periwinkle vine. It's a exotic species, doesn't really belong in the woods. And yet, it's part of the story of the place because it's telling us that there were people here before who valued this plant and they put it here and it has survived. The park was made here because it's a spectacular geological formation. This is beautiful limestone ledges and sculpted pavements of limestone where the glacier passed over here and created a huge waterfall which created the lake, scoured out the limestone, and there's so many plants that love to live on that damp limestone. So it's a favorite place of mine to come and teach and come in and watch the unfolding of the season. You look around you and it's not just an assemblage of trees and green things, but it's a whole story. You know, as I'm walking around here, I do love to pay attention to the little things, but this time of year, when there aren't any leaves out and the flowers aren't up yet, you get to really see all of the textures and colors of the place. You know, back here is another tree that's telling a story. Look at this. This is a shagbark hickory right here with those great big platy bark on it. And, you know, when you see that, you know something about the history of this place. Its nuts, which are delicious, only grows in bright sun in open places. So this tells you that this is not an old forest. This is a young forest coming back from some kind of disturbance. It also tells you when you see shagbark hickories, this is the place to be in the fall. Delicious food from the hickory nuts, a really important traditional food of indigenous peoples in this habitat. This piece of land is part of the ancestral and the contemporary territories of the Onondaga Nation, the central fire of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. And this state park is a favorite of residents of Syracuse. There are miles of hiking trails and it's great birding and botanizing. So it's a place which is well loved by residents of the region. One of the reasons I love to bring my students here is these beautiful mossy ledges that all of this limestone was scraped bare by the glacier. And without any soil on it, for the most part, the rooted plants can't grow. And then it makes these gorgeous habitats for all of the mosses. And you might at first just look around you and say, okay, there's a green carpet on the rocks. But when your eye starts to become tuned and you use all of your senses, you realize that there's no such thing as just moss. It's mosses. There's all these different kinds. And I mean, just look in here. And the thousand shades of green, there's the bright lime green and the rusty orange green and the browny green and the bright grass green, the shiny ones, the dull ones. Every one of them is a different species. And it starts to just draw you in closer and closer to see how they live their lives. They're just amazing. I come to this place often, and particularly as a teaching landscape, because it's a place where the geology and the botany and the birds and the people all come together. And it's a place to be able to teach natural history, ecology, and cultural relationship as well. You know, for me, all of the plants are teachers. They have things that we could learn from them. And the mosses are the oldest plants on Earth. And if you look at the fossils of mosses and you look at contemporary mosses, they haven't changed very much. So what we're talking about here is that the oldest plants on the planet are right here. And that means that these plants that have existed since plants even came onto the land have endured every climate change that has ever happened on Earth. They have endured when most organisms have gone extinct. The mosses have endured. So you have to look at these and say, well, how did you do it? What lessons do you have for us mosses about how we could live? How do we adapt, and how are we resilient in the face of the changes that are upon us? And one of the answers that the mosses have for you is simplicity. They ask very little of their environment, and they give a lot back. It may just look like a green blanket, but they're harboring so much biodiversity. They're called the coral reef of the forest for all the little critters that live in these tiny little moss forests. They make soil, they purify water, they create habitats for others. They give a lot and don't take much. They live simply. They don't change the environment. They live within the environment. And so then we ask ourselves, well, how did they persist through every climate change that has ever been on the planet? Well, that's how. Being small, adaptable, and not changing the environment, but adapting to the environment. A place like this is an opportunity to really listen to the land and really slow down and watch and engage with the life unfolding around you. And that practice, that muscle, if you will, of paying attention to the land and learning from the land is something that we have started to lose because of all the time we spend on digital media, all the time we spend inside. I fear that we're forgetting how to really engage with the land, to listen and to learn from the land as our teacher. But the good thing about that is that all you have to do is be in the presence of that teacher. All you have to do is be outside and pay attention and open all of your senses to the world around you. And those skills and abilities are latent. They're waiting to be woken up. So all it takes is the time and that beautiful gift of human attention. Oh, look, here's these nice ribbon leaf sedges. They're evergreen under the snow. But, oh, look, there's the new growth of these ribbon leaf sedges coming. They're some of the earliest to come up. Oh, and you can just feel how warm those leaves are. Even though there was snow here just a couple of days ago, that southern exposure and the sun is warming things right up. This beautiful tree really calls to me because in our language, this is a basswood, also known as the American linden. And the basswood in our language we call wingope, which is the string tree. And in the underneath the bark, there are these sheets of fibers that our people routinely would harvest to use as cordage, as rope and twine for tying everything together, for weaving into fabrics and bags and containers. So it's a tree that you really like to see in the forest. You might just walk by it and say, well, you know, it's just a big old gray tree, but in fact it bears these amazing gifts. In fact, I like this tree so much. It has these beautiful fragrant flowers in the springtime. It's such a generous and beautiful tree that I named my daughter after this tree. Her name is Lyndon. So I didn't name her basswood. That wouldn't be a very pretty name. But as a professor, I try to get my students out onto the land just as often as I can. Sometimes we're indoors. We're learning online, of course, this year, and learning from books. That's all good. But there is absolutely no replacement for learning from the land herself. You learn, you know, to exercise all of your faculties, not just the intellect, right? Not just your mental powers of learning how the world is, but to feel how the world is, to sense it, to develop a relationship with the living world. We know that we learn so much better when we're engaging our memories, when we're engaging story, when we're engaging our aesthetic senses. And I'm sorry, but that just doesn't happen so much in a textbook. And so to me, the place to learn to be a biologist, to learn to be a naturalist, is on the land. And once you come to know the different beings that are around you. You see not only stories, but the way that the land cares for you. Just standing in this place, I see the food of the hickory, the food of the maples, the string of the basswood, and I see medicine right here in front of us. That black, flaky bark is a black cherry. And did you ever wonder why cough drops almost always come in black cherry flavor? It's because black cherry is a cough medicine. And the bark of the twigs of that tree boiled down make a really good soothing cough medicine. And so, yes, you look at the world as full of biodiversity and these amazing beings living their lives, but they also are in relationship with us. And you see the cedars, really good respiratory medicine. We'll get close to one later. We came by a hemlock, which is super good for colds. It has tons of vitamin C in it. So they're medicines. They're medicines all around us to be honored, to be respected. And in fact, in our Potawatomi language, the word for plants is mishkakin, which means the medicines. But it also means, if you take that word mishkakin apart, it means the strength of the earth. And so when we talk about plants healing us, they're healing us with the strength of the earth. And to feel that and to feel all those gifts that are all around you makes the woods into a very different place. The Potawatomi language, which is the language of my ancestors and which I am a beginning student, is full of sounds that to me sound like the land. There's lots of double consonants, zhuzh and shushes, that sound just like the wind that's surrounding us. There are sounds that are like waves on rocks. And so it's a language that to me sounds like the sounds of the natural world. And our language, we say, is sacred to the people, because it was a gift to us. You know, when we talk about the stories that the land holds, we had a recent story. There was a homestead here. We have an ancient story right here, where the snow is lying there later than any place else in this cold, wet little drainage. Look at the cliffs up above it. This is an old plunge pool from a great river. Up here on this cliff, the river that was draining glacial Lake Iroquois came tumbling over these cliffs. And this little basin is where the power of the water carved out this little basin. And today it's filled with water only in the springtime, and a great place for frogs and salamanders and spring peepers living in the remnants of that ancient glacial river. One of the greatest sources of biodiversity in woods like this are, of course, the fungi, who are busy decomposing all the leaves and the wood. And on this old tree base, here is one that I think is very common but really beautiful. It's called the turkey tail fungus, for the way it comes in these little banded, colored fans, like an expanded turkey tail. These are wood destroyers. They're busy bringing this back down to humus. And down here, you can see up here, they're, you know, gray and rusty. And down here where they're green, these are algae that are living on top of them. So everything has its own niche, including living on others. And, you know, while this fungus, the turkey tail, is doing its work in the forest, it's also a medicine. It's a traditional medicine that is used for the immune system, for fighting off infections. That's a great one. Let's see what else we can find here. My friends and family tease me about these stories because, you know, you might previously just walk through the woods thinking, I'm just going for a hike, and you know, I'm going to move right along. They say, Robin, when we hike with you, we don't ever get very far because you always have to stop and look at everything and say, why are you here? But it is, for me, makes it a really rich experience. This past couple of days, we've had warm winds from the south, and so the beginning of the songbird migration is upon us. Just yesterday, there were killdeer in the sky, and the mourning doves began singing, the robins began singing. So this is a really special time of year to see all of those who have left us for the winter starting to come back. Whoa, look at this. This old maple has been worked by a pileated woodpecker. When you see those long oblong shapes, that tells you it's a pileated woodpecker with that really big, strong jackhammer of a beak that's been working that tree trunk to get bugs and grubs out. And whoa, it has been so busy. Look at all these shards down here. The whole base of the tree covered with these chunks that have been knocked out by the woodpecker. That's a good source of winter food, right? The bugs that are under the bark. Oh yeah, you can see where all the little insect holes here are too. There's some good food in there if you're a woodpecker. One of the consequences of spending time on the land and paying attention to birds and trees and berries and roots and grasses and bugs and all of the things that are around you is you start to think about the world as full of persons, of more than human persons, and that they're bringing us these gifts of the joy of watching them, the foods that they provide for us, everything that they have to teach us. In our traditional culture, we say that the chickadees are always talking to the people. They're very social birds. They come around people. They really like to be in multi-species flocks. They go about the woods with other species in this sort of convivial little gatherings. And we're told that we should always pay attention when the chickadees speak to us. And there are a lot of old stories about the chickadees talking about changes in the weather, warning people about things that are on the wind, as it were. And you know that those old stories that say that we could learn from the birds and benefit from their counsel is something that gets dismissed as fairy tales or folklore. But when you really do start to listen and hear all the different voices, chickadees, for example, have something like 40 different calls. They're not just making noise, they're talking to each other, and why not talking to us as well? A lot of the old teachings and stories are being verified, if you will, by Western science today. Not that they had to be verified, they were true all on their own. I think that once we start to see the world as gifts from more than human relatives, then it brings us to gratitude for the gifts of the land. And my hope and challenge to all of us is that as we give gratitude to the land, could we also shape our lives so that we live in such a way that the land might be grateful for us?
Traffic and now construction. smoke to the nickel and rock. Skolin, land of Skolin, land of Skolin.
Love. Vodka.
Vodka.
Oh, cream de tea.
What's your name?
Hey, there you go, Doug. That was, earlier, I guess. Jerry Cerrada?
Cerrada, yeah.
Cerrada. And his, I met a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And my question was, you only met one?
Well, one special one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I get it now.
Okay.
So, hey, Doug, we're almost done.
No.
Yeah, we're almost done as we close our set with this powerhouse.
Mm.
And she started in a country, but her soul belongs to the blues.
Oh, that's good.
Well, is it?
Well, it is for me.
anyway, it's Crystal Shawanda. She's Ojibwe. She grew up in the Wiquamacong First Nation on Manitoulin Island. She initially rose to fame as a country star, but her transition into the blues revealed her true power. So she's got a raspy voice, and it has earned her a Juno Awards and the reputation as one of the most formidable vocalists in the industry today.
Mm. So, you're in for a treat, I hope.
I hope, too. Sing Pretty Blues is her selection. Now, have you heard this song, Doug?
Only once.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. That's why it's here, I think.
Uh-huh. Get ready. Yeah. Get ready to hear it again.
That's right. Well, you know, I like her voice. And it also takes me away from some of the struggles in the media that we have these days. So, you know, listening to her singing and the ideas that she has, she is like the fellow we just talked about, Jerry Cerrada, a storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
But she does it through blues.
Yeah. Well, good.
Okay. Well, there you go. What's the song again?
Sing Pretty Blues.
Yeah. Okay, great. We'll chat with you in a bit.
Underneath 30 years and they're still letting us near microphones.
It's true. We've got the music, the stories, and absolutely no filter.
From deep cuts to guilty pleasures, if it made noise in the last 3 decades,
we're probably playing it and maybe laughing about it.
This is 30 Years in Nonsense.
Hosted by Terry and Sherry Doherty.
Only on CFRC 101.9 FM, Kingston's campus and community radio.
Turn it up
and embrace the nonsense.
It's not a TV studio. Josh, turn these lights out. It's a fucking rock concert.